Well, let's prove it and do a semi-professional podcast, I suppose.
Maybe.
Yeah, we're only 18 minutes late.
Hey, come on.
Welcome to Mintcast episode 323. Live stream information is at mintcast.org/livestream. We're in the Mintcast channel in IRC at irc.spotchat.org. If you see something that you'd like to hear about, tell us. Send us email at mintcast@mintcast.org. Join us on MeWe and Facebook. Post at the Mintcast subreddit. Chat with us on Telegram, Discord, or post directly at mintcast.org. This is Leo, and with me today is Tony Hughes.
Hi, guys.
Joe.
I'm here.
Moss.
Living the good life.
And Tony Watts.
Hello, everyone.
We're recording on Sunday, December 1st, 2019. First up in our wanderings, I go upstream. Moss fights frustration by installing Sabayon again. Tony Hughes grapples with GNOME 3. Joe fixes some keyboards, and Tony Watts plays on Proton. Then in our news, Linux Mint has a new update, System76 builds its own laptops, Kali goes undercover, the new 5.4 kernel, and more. In security, we talk D-Link remote access. Well, this past fortnight, it's been a journey. I've had a few different things that I've had to go through. Well, as you heard in the intro, Josh isn't with us this fortnight. And so I took over streaming duties for a little while at least. And we're doing this on YouTube. So, if you didn't get the link, it's on Twitter and all of the chat places. But that was kind of fun. It's kind of a funny story. The OBS thing, well, I don't know. Okay, maybe not funny. Funny to me. This past couple of weeks, we ran into this issue at work with WebEx, and we have a limited amount of storage to do cloud recordings so we can download them and give them to the students. And we were full. And so at the very beginning of the day, I mean, we're talking like it's 8:00, I'm not thinking straight. I click record and it's like, nah, we don't have any space. I'm like, well, this is kind of an important week. So I had to scramble for about 15, 20 minutes to figure out how to get something and set it up all for free. And it turned out OBS. Well, OBS is also able to do just plain old desktop microphone recordings, and you throw a video camera on there. And it's fantastic. It's great. The funny thing about this is that the audio quality was insanely better than what WebEx was giving us. And I don't know why. I cannot tell you for the life of me why OBS just trampled all over WebEx. But long story short, that's what happened. Figured out OBS, got a screen recording, and everything is great. It works better than, I don't know how much we pay for it, but whatever we're paying for it, it's too much. So anyway, OBS to the rescue, it's great. But it worked out that OBS is what I'm using right now on a secondary machine to stream all of this to YouTube as well. So for a couple of different reasons, I've just been diving into OBS, and I've had a really good time with it. There have not been any issues that I've run into just yet. And right now, we're doing a simple stream to YouTube. This is the first time I'm actually doing streaming to YouTube. So if you're watching it, it's just a simple image, nothing fancy. All that we've got is just the audio stream and an image. But you can do so much more. So my plans, I didn't want to rock the boat this time. I did not want to rock the boat. But my plans for it, if we continue on this YouTube thing, is going to be, I want like a Telegram stream going on and a Discord stream going on and an IRC stream going on. I don't know how you do that. Like, I'm that guy that's like, oh, you're a programmer? Hey, you should totally make my idea. That's what I'm doing, except I'm the programmer too. So I'm going to have to figure out if any of this is possible in the first place. So, I don't know, if you're listening and you have any experience doing any of this at all, let me know. That'd be great.
And a picture of my wet kitten.
So on the test stream yesterday, that's what I was streaming out for a little while. I don't know if we're going to release that, but that was a little stream that we were doing, and it had a wet kitty front and center for a whole 5 minutes. I was testing out, what was I testing out? Screen sharing or something like that, just casting the whole screen. It's pretty cool. Anyway, so I know there are some listeners that prefer to have a copy of this at the end of everything. They like to use VLC and they like to do do the audio stream and have a copy for themselves. I have a fix for you because I don't think you can actually do that in YouTube. There might be some tool out there that allows you to do that like on the fly or whatever, but I don't know what it is. However, I have a command for you to run. If you have YouTube DL installed, all you gotta do is pop in the URL for this video. It's all you gotta change in the command that I'm gonna have in the show notes to get a copy of this. And since the people that do the recording of the live stream want that more immediate, I guess, I'll throw that in the Telegram and Discord chats as well.
As an addition there, if you want it from an Android device, you can use YouTube Vanced, which is from XDA developers.
Ooh, if you get a chance, throw that into the show notes, because I would like to take a look at that too. So the other stuff outside of directly show-related stuff, Ubi ports. So I've heard over and over and over and over again that Ubuntu Touch is not dead. It's not dead. It's still around. The UbiPorts guys took it. And, you know, that went in one ear and out the other every single time I heard it, except, and I'm not looking at his name right now, so I hope I get it right, but I follow Diogo Constantino, I believe is his name, on Twitter, and I see him talking about UbiPorts, and I see him kind of being the bulwark a lot of times, because I see it on Twitter all the time, where it's like, Ubuntu Touch is dead, I wish it wasn't dead, and then here comes Diogo, like, nope, it's not dead, here's a link, you know, so he's like, he's fighting the good fight on Twitter over here, keeping everything alive. So the 100 millionth time that I saw him do that, I was like, all right, you know what, fine. I just saw that the Nexus 2013 Wi-Fi edition was supported. And I was like, you know what? It's not doing anything. It's just collecting dust anyway. Let's just put it on. So I took it to work one day and I had about a whole 10-minute break. And I was like, well, I'll just Google it, see what the effort is going to be. And in 10 minutes, I had it on. Like there was no work involved. So keep in mind, I had already unlocked the bootloader like years ago, and I had already put on a couple different operating systems years ago as well. So that footwork had already been done by past Leo for myself, so I didn't have to do that. So if your device is still locked, there's a little bit of heave-hoing that you're going to have to do. But for me, it was nothing. So on Linux, snap install ubiports-installer was all I had to install. Then plugged in my device, set it to developer mode, and that was like that. The install took a minute. The developer mode took what, like 5 taps? I don't know. However you do that. And then I just ran the installer. That was it. And then I walked away from it. And like 20-30 minutes later, I came back and it was done. I was able to use it. That was, yeah, it was insanely simple. I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I've just been using it the past few days. And okay, so there's one thing. The screen keeps turning on. I don't know why. Just like out of nowhere, it just keeps turning on. And the other thing I saw was when we go to mintcast.org, the AUG feed doesn't show up. Like you can't play it for some reason. This was an issue that I thought we only had on iPhones, iDevices, iThings, because they don't support AUG out of the box. But also, it's in Morph Browser, which is interesting. I don't know that that's not by design. It very well could be, because the MP3 is totally supported.
Now, I'm just wondering, with the UB ports, what else can you install? I mean, could you install Chrome? Can you install desktop applications, or is it only applications that are specifically built for your version of UB ports?
So I'm still learning how all of this works. So to be quite honest with you, I don't know yet. They have this thing called the Open Store inside of there, and you can scroll through. But let me see. If I search Firefox, I get nothing. I get fsend. Oh, so the unofficial web app of Firefox Send. So it looks like... So I remember this from way back in the day, and this may totally be very wrong. But the way that these apps on UB ports, I guess, or Ubuntu Touch work is that they're really just web apps that they just give you a window inside the device to actually look at. So I'm not sure. I'm going to have to dig way further into it. So this is just kind of like a cursory, hey, I installed it and have been playing with it a little bit, you know, surfing the web, things like that on it. So I don't really have a whole lot to report, to be quite honest with you. But so far, everything else is working fine. I don't have, I haven't had any issues. But like I said, I've really just been surfing the web on it.
Calls, text messages.
This is not a phone. This is just a tablet with Wi-Fi. So I cannot.
That's what Hangouts is for.
Ah, true that. And I think if it's a web app, you can do Hangouts. Let me see if I do Google. See what I. Oh, yeah, like Google Plus. Oh, Google Plus. Of course it is. Google Drive Basic. I bet Hangouts is down here somewhere. There's Maps. Ooh, Discord is there. Oh, nice. So it does support quite a bit. Google Mail. I don't see a Hangouts.
See if it does voice. I mean, if it does Google Voice, then it'll do everything the Hangouts does, essentially.
Okay. So, yeah. So, you know what? If you have some things that you want me to test on it, give me a list, and I'll test them all, and then next show we'll talk about it some more. Because I feel like, okay, I'll take a look at that. I just feel like I've totally breathed new life into this tablet, and I'm considering taking it around with me again. So
it could be your podcasting mobile station.
Yeah, so I don't know that Audacity would work because it's not a web app. But if there's something on the web that will allow me to record, then I think it would work.
Yeah, then you just need Mumble.
Right, yeah, if there's a Mumble on somewhere around there, I'll be able to use it.
Being too broke to be able to afford these devices and whatnot, I would also be curious as to how well Plasma Mobile works.
Well, you can get you should be able to get a Nexus 5 relatively low cost. They're several years old now, but it's one of the few devices that runs UB ports pretty well.
Well, I'm hoping this changes soon, but right now getting food is a difficulty.
Right.
Yeah, Joe, I still have a Nexus 5 laying around from the mobile episode that we did. I bought one on eBay. They run for about $40 right now, but I've still got it laying here. Plasma Mobile, I didn't have much luck installing. I kind of gave up on it, but like you said, Leah, the UB ports install is a breeze.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. It looked like, it reminded me of the Cyanogen mod. I guess this is, what are they called now? They're not Cyanogen mod anymore.
Lineage OS is what it's called now.
So what all of you run on it, Tony?
So I definitely used it for calls and texts and all that kind of standard stuff. I had a couple of podcast apps running on it. My goal at the time, I have a company phone and I had a separate personal phone at the time. And I wanted to try to do just talk, text, and podcasts at a minimum, and then, you know, social media apps as well. And I was able to do all of that.
Nifty. I'll have to take a look at that because I think I can control the majority, if not all, of Mintcast from the tablet now, I guess, if that's going to be the case, because most everything is on the web.
Still not as cool as my Dell venue.
Yeah. Well, the other last thing that I've got is I just installed a 1080p panel in my laptop. I had been thrashing around on the 1600 by 900, I think is what it was, panel. And I had been thrashing around on that for about a year and a half, 2 years, however long I had this laptop. And that was before I was on the show. So
you didn't mention the model of the laptop. Someone who is listening would love to know that.
The model what?
Of your laptop. T450.
Yeah, T450S.
Oh, did I not? Right?
Okay. Yeah, that's it. So T450S cost me about $50 to get the 1080p panel. It said it was IPS, but after I install it, some of those viewing angles say no, it's not. But it's good. It's actually it was a huge leap forward in terms of viewing angles from my previous panel. So I am not disappointed at all, especially not for the price. But the 1080 is the thing that is quite amazing. Everything is, I mean, slightly smaller, as you might expect. The screen size didn't change, just the amount of pixels in there. But, man, it is, for $50, yeah, this just made this laptop, it's going to last me another couple years at least with this new panel. So I really do appreciate that. It's a huge improvement. Well, that's all I got for me. So, Tony Hughes, what do you got?
Okay. Well, been doing a couple of things Linuxy and a few things non-Linuxy this week or so. This week I actually installed Linux Mint on a HP G62 laptop. It's an AMD Phenom 2 triple core processor, believe it or not. I'd never heard of them. Apparently it was a quad core processor that they couldn't get it to work properly with all four cores, so they downscaled it to three cores. So the processor itself is about 10 years old, so the PC is probably about 9 years old or so, or coming up to 9 years old. The processor came out in December 2010. It's coming up to 9 years old, the PC. It works okay with Mint. Battery life's terrible, but you'd expect that on a 9-year-old laptop and get about 1.5-2 hours on it, even though it's showing that it's a good battery. I suspect it's probably an aftermarket replacement at some time in its life. It also runs really hot. The CPU draws about 35 watt at the top. So, it kicks out some heat when it's going. Don't keep it on your lap for very long unless you've got a cooler underneath it.
Have you taken it apart, cleaned it out, and maybe replaced some thermal paste?
Yeah, that's probably... I'll have to do a bit of research on it, see if I can see how easy it is to do that.
Well, it's probably a pain in the butt.
Yeah. It probably would run a bit cooler if I did that, but I'm not sure whether the effort's worth it, because it's not getting hot enough to go into thermal cutout or anything like that. And depending what I do with it in the end, will depend whether I go to that trouble of stripping it down and giving it repasting it. But it is a nice little machine. Runs great. Runs mint. Fantastic. I was using it again yesterday at the lug, and no problems with it. So, as well as that, I've been continuing to get to grips with Ubuntu 19.10 for the DistroHopper's Digest review this month, which we're recording on Wednesday. I managed to get it looking a little bit more familiar for me using Dash to Panel. I managed to install a panel on the bottom of the screen and hide the side dock. And so it does feel a little bit more like home. But I've got to say, I'm still not a massive fan of the GNOME desktop. My personal choice would probably continue either on Mate or XFCE. But it works. It's Ubuntu. What can you say? It works. all the software I've used on it has been fine. And I've also been continuing to invest... And that's a code for spending all my money on my new hobby of restoring Matchbox models. I bought a few consignments on eBay. I got some bargains with mainly 1950s and 1960s models and a few of the later 70s ones. I've been investing a little bit more today as well. I've also been buying tools and equipment for repainting and getting the models up and nice and shiny. And I actually did my first restoration this weekend. I posted a few pictures on the Mintcast Discord.
And it looked really good, Tony.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Thank you, Moss. but that was in the private section. Maybe I'll post something in the public section of the Discord channel. Just a couple of photographs. It was a Matchbox number 28 Mark 10 Jaguar, if anyone's interested. But that's about it for me this week.
I wanted to say, the AMD Phenom 2 that you were using, sorry, I have this new 1080p panel, so I'm like moving everything around. But so the Phenom 2, I had, it wasn't the mobile chip, but I had the AMD Phenom 2 955 Black Edition for the longest time. So this is where my AMD fanboyism started way back in the day. It was one of the it was the first four core I had ever had. I skipped the Intel Q series. But anyway, that that CPU rode me into the sunset. It was fantastic. And on the GNOME thing, I didn't bring it up in my wanderings. I was planning on doing it next time, but I'm running GNOME Manjaro on my desktop a little bit. So Ooh. I know what you're feeling about the whole GNOME thing, because it's weird. It is so different. The thing that gets me is that hotspot up in the top left. Do you have that?
Yeah, you can deactivate that if you want to in the settings.
Well, I'm coming to terms with it.
Which I generally do.
So at first I hated it, and then I didn't want to have to go out and get GNOME Tweak or whatever it was to go turn that off. But so I was so lazy that I didn't do that. And then maybe like an hour later, I realized it was one motion instead of one motion and a click. And I'm like, well, I don't really do anything else up there, so maybe I'll leave it. So I don't know. I'm getting to grips with it. It's okay, but I'm still not sure how I feel about GNOME overall. But I feel the same kind of pain points you do.
I ended up installing GNOME Tweaks, dash to dock and dash to panel to get everything out, the way I wanted it to look. And it still doesn't quite work in the same way as a normal panel on the bottom with a normal menu, but it's not far off.
Yeah. But you're on the Ubuntu one, so you do get desktop icons, right?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, you can get a few desktop icons.
Yeah, I'm trying to get used to not having them, because the version that I've got does not do those icons. And there's so many times I've been like, nah, throw it on the desktop. Wait, why does it not go?
I will point out that Zorin OS also uses GNOME, and it has managed to look very much like a GNOME 2 panel, and you do get icons. So you might want to check that out.
I'll check it out. Ooh, speaking of Zorin, I don't know. We might blurb it in a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah, like I say, it's Ubuntu. You know, with a desktop environment that I'm not particularly keen on. Ubuntu itself is fine. Got no problems with Ubuntu. And if I was going to use Ubuntu on a regular basis, I'd choose Ubuntu Mate or the XFCE version, Zubuntu. So, I started off with Ubuntu back in the day. And then when they introduced Unity, I went over to Mint. That was how I got back my familiar GNOME 2 looking desktop. So that's me for this week. Moss, what have you got for us?
Oh boy. Let's see here. I sold an Asus memo pad to a listener. I hadn't even put it up for sale, but he asked what I had that was cheap, and I told him it was a turkey of a tablet. I had such high hopes for it when I bought it. I got about $12 for it and bought some groceries. Zorin OS 15 has just released their light version with XFCE desktop, and they did quite a lovely job on the desktop. It looks just like Windows 7 or Ubuntu Mate. I put it on my Kudu 3. I kind of like it. Yes, I am now triple booting the Kudu, which I bought to be a single boot system, but it's Core, Ultimate, and Light, all Zorin. During a period of digital frustration, I remembered I had a free partition on my Galago Pro 2. I eased my nerves by taking a few hours and successfully installing Sabayon. Yes, it took a while. Yes, it's Gentoo, but it's so sweet. I don't know what it is. It's just Sabayon looks and feels like a fun system. And everyone goes, but that's Gentoo. Well, that's true, but it's nice. Try it. I made an attempt to boot my inherited Linux box. Sadly, the password was not what I expected it to be, so I couldn't log into what was probably an old version of Fedora, so I attempted to install Linux Mint on it. This is where that earlier frustration came in. I ran into another instance of the grub not being written properly, and I could not get the CD drive to boot, so I could have used my Super Grub 2 disk. I had some discussion with a Telegram group of people, mostly CryptoDan and Peter Jones, and got frustrated, so I put the box away for a while. I promised to get back to it. The box is pretty nice, a mini ATX with 16 gigs of RAM and a 120 gigabyte SSD on a gigabyte motherboard.
Yeah, that does sound pretty nice. What's the processor on it, do you know?
No, I don't, but I could find out for you.
Okay.
It's not here in the room anymore.
Yeah, no worries, no worries. What you could do is, you know, boot up from a live CD or something, and you should be able to manipulate the password file, if I remember.
Well,
right.
I've already
been a long time since I've done something.
I have
like
already
that.
Blown away that installation. The grub got messed up by my trying to blow away the installation.
Okay.
Yeah, and some people said, well, there's this tool and that tool you can add to your live disk, your live stick. I'm going, yeah, but I start getting really messed up when people tell me to do things I'm not familiar with yet. I'll figure it out. I will. I have added some tiers and a donation link to my sponsors page. Now I just need to get some sponsors and donations. I found I'd opened two accounts at Reverb Nation sometime in 2014 and promptly forgotten about both. I've written to Reverb Nation to see if they can combine the two and then see if I can put the site to some use promoting my music. I did find a recording posted there that I didn't think I'd posted anywhere. And I just celebrated my third anniversary, and Wednesday will be my oomph birthday. Distro Hopper's Digest is
what was that,
Moss? Recorded. Yeah, my oomph birthday. You got that?
I'm sorry. I'm having a difficulty hearing that last statement.
Oomph! Distro Hopper's Digest will be recorded on my birthday, and then Tony should have it out the following Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, let's just say Mossy's probably the oldest amongst us.
What are not you, like 25, 26?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's just like Joe says, I don't look like I'm 255 pounds either. Anyhow, speaking of Joe, why don't we see what Joe's been up to? Hey, Joe.
Hey, I'm here. Okay, well, you know, I listened to an audio drama / podcast. It was two seasons of Wolverine. It's a really good listen. I recommend it. I did have to really reduce my speed. I usually do for audio dramas, so I dropped from a 3 to a 1.5 to give it a listen, and it was still pretty short, but it was really good, so I do recommend it. And I've included the link, www.wolverinepodcast.com, and it is involved with Marvel, so it, like I said, pretty good. Give it a listen. And I also listened to Piers Anthony's Bio of a Space Tyrant, most assuredly not a book for younger readers, based on the topics, which are murder, piracy, incest, and sex with people that I would consider underage. I did listen to all six books in the series. Anthony is one of my more liked authors, and he has also written all his books on Linux machines since about 2000. This is a really well-read series. The guy doing the recording did a really good job. But like I said, in the end, I can't really recommend it to other readers. I didn't dislike it, but I find it hard to suggest for anybody else to read. Also, I'm listening once again to the Dresden Files, hoping that the new book comes out sometime soon. That's what, 16 book series, 15 book series, plus a bunch of short stories, and I'm waiting for book number 16 to come out. And that's all read by James Marsters. And the author is Jim Butcher. Also, I finally did the keyboard replacement on that convertible HP laptop I was talking about, I think, last show. I had to remove Linux and reinstall Windows for my daughter. But in order to get it to work right, I had to install WoWUSB onto one of my machines to make a bootable Windows 10 USB stick, and gave that to my eldest daughter so that she could give her laptop to her sister, who ruined another charging port on another tablet. And this one was the Asus Transformer T102HA, which I was using as a backup laptop in case something happened to my Dell Venue. And I will be taking it apart to see if I can fix that charging port, but charging ports are difficult to me. But that's two T100s and a T102 that currently have that problem. So I guess I'm going to have to learn how to fix it and get a hot air gun. I mean, I know the theory, but the practice is a little different. Also, yesterday, as a matter of fact, I had a problem with one of my Dell Venue 11 keyboards where not all the keys were working, and some of the keys, no matter how gently I pressed them, were doing multiples. So I'd like press P and five P's would come out. So I had a spare keyboard with a bad battery. At least I thought that was the only problem. So I did a swap between the one with the bad keys, pulled the battery out of there and put it into the one with the bad battery, and it still didn't work. Well, it worked, but the touchpad would not work no matter how many times I disconnected or reconnected it. And it would work if the battery itself wasn't connected, so that was a little weird. So I pulled the touchpad off of the old one and swapped it over to the one with good keys. Still didn't work. So I swapped the cables for the touchpad, thinking it might be a cable issue at that point. Still didn't work. So I swapped the entire connector bracket that goes from the tablet to the keyboard, thinking it would be the last time I had to take it apart, because there wasn't much else to do. And it wasn't. It still didn't work. The touchpad would not recognize at all when the battery was connected. So finally, I swapped out the main board, hoping that wasn't what was bad on the other keyboard. And it works great most of the time. There's still some issues sometimes on restart, but that seems to be a problem with all the keyboards for this device. Just disconnect and reconnect a couple of times and everything works. That was about 7 hours worth of work total, with testing and reseating between each step to make sure that I had done things correctly. Also, I could have had it done much quicker if I just realized that I could just moving the main board would have been easier. But I have two fully functioning keyboards again, and I know a lot more about how that keyboard is put together. I really need that extra battery power from those keyboards to make it through a whole day. But I'm still thinking about getting one of the soft keyboards without batteries, just to have that simpler backup where I'm not worried about, you know, what could break. And I did pick up a travel router, the GL iNet GLAR300M EXT. Works really good so far. The EasyTether install worked like a charm, but T-Mobile seems to be detecting and throttling. It may just be detecting the router. More testing is required. More details in the innards. And that's really all I got. Tony Watts, what have you been up to?
Well, before I get into that stuff, I will say I admire your dedication. I am positive I would have given up on that keyboard repair several hours before you did. But well done.
Yeah, I'm a stubborn.
So I see. And you were talking about the soft keyboards. I've made a bookmark on that too, because the 7130, that's my main complaint. I bought a used keyboard and the battery just doesn't last. So I would use it a lot more if I had a usable keyboard, and right now I don't.
Yeah, and the replacement batteries for the keyboards, if you want one that's brand new as opposed to one that's used and probably not going to work, you're looking at like $55 just for that battery.
Yeah, no way. Okay, well, moving into some of the piddling I've been doing, it wasn't as much constructive as it was just goofing off, but had a break off of work for the Thanksgiving holiday, and also took a couple of vacation days to be home with my boys when they were out of school. And most everything I did it revolved around playing some games, which I don't normally have time to do, so that was fun. But I started with a RAM upgrade on the machine that's in my living room. And how I missed doing this before, I don't know. I knew that the RAM was 4 gig, which was, you know, underpowered. But I took the case apart, and there was just a big empty slot sitting in there, which you usually don't find, right? Usually you'll have a couple of slots and they're full, and you'd have to, you know, chuck whatever's in there and replace. But I found for the princely sum of $10 American, another stick to match the one that was already in it, and doubled the RAM to 8. So from there, I did some gaming. I played with some native Linux games, some Proton games, and also the PCSX2 emulator, which is the PlayStation 2 emulator on Linux.
Love that emulator.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the reasons I hadn't really messed with it before now is I think when I really was spending a lot of time doing emulation, I didn't have a computer powerful enough to run that emulator. I do now. And so I wanted to give it a whirl. And I tested a couple of games. I played Spider-Man 2, which is a really good game on PlayStation 2. And a couple of issues I was able to fix right away just with Googling. The main issue I noticed is the graphics were funky. You know, as you moved about, the graphics and the environment were all strange. I don't know how to explain it better than that. But I changed the graphics rendering from hardware to software, and then that cleared that right up. So from there, it went pretty well with the couple of games that I tried, but that kind of led me into a whole other rabbit hole. Once I started playing PlayStation 2 games, one of them was Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. And I remembered they had a PC game for that. So I installed that and played it on Proton. And it worked well.
Let me make a recommendation on a game. It's actually a PS1 game. And that's
okay.
Armored Core Master of Arena.
Cool.
Give that a try.
I will do that. Okay. The San Andreas game, I remembered they had a PC version of that. And so I tried it under Proton and it worked well. I don't think I ever did the check to look on like Proton DB and see if, you know, how compatible it was under Proton. But in the experience playing it, it worked great. The only problems that I had occasionally coming out of loading a save game, it would crash. And I actually, when I played it, I kind of just had a terminal running in the other monitor with top running. And when that happened, I would just go to that and kill it and fire it back up. And it was funny. I was running top, and then a voice in my head that sounded a whole lot like Leo was like, try H top. So I did that.
That would be me. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. And I basically came to the conclusion that under Proton, if you have a computer that's powerful enough to afford the extra overhead, it's probably a lot more fun. The computer that I'm running on, just a real quick rundown, is 4th gen i3. I have a crappy NVIDIA card with 1 gig of memory. It's one of those low profile, low powered cards, and 8 gigs of RAM. So with that, I was able to run really old games with no problem. But one of the first ones I tried that didn't work, I was able to pick up a Steam key pretty cheap for one of the Batman Arkham games. It was Batman Arkham Origins, which had a good rating for compatibility. I think it was platinum for Proton compatibility. But the lag was just too much for it to be playable. So it worked fine in Windows, and I'm sure it works fine in Proton, but just...
Yes, not... it does.
Yeah, okay. Confirmed. I figured that was the case, but alas, not on my pitifully low-powered PC.
I will second the whole Proton thing, though. Absolutely. I play... if Bo were here, he would back me up on this one, too. But yeah, I play World of Warcraft, and the one thing that I have to worry about, not Proton... but DXVK, which is Proton, what Proton lives on top of, is every time I have to do Mesa updates, because I'm on a rolling release driver PPA or something like that. Man, every time I install one, the performance is slightly better, but every time I run the updates, I have this mini little heart attack where it's like, oh my God, Mike, it's just not going to boot up. Watch, it's just not going to boot up. And then it always boots up, but yeah.
Well, I had a good time. I'm not a gamer, and so I don't know if I'll invest in building a gaming PC anytime soon, but I can certainly see where if you have a little more oomph, you have a whole lot of options to play some games under Linux. The last thing I was going to mention, I did run a couple of native Linux games, and those were, of course, great. And the method of testing that I used for that was I put my 12-year-old kid in front of the computer and let him play whatever he wanted to out of the selections of native Linux games. And so he played Team Fortress 2 quite a bit. That's one that he likes, I guess. And I was interested in some others. I installed No Room in Hell, which was like a zombie shooter multiplayer, Counter-Strike Go. I haven't really played them, but I plan to. And I saw there were some other games out there natively for Linux that there are a couple of really good titles there. There's a Tomb Raider game and Shadow of Mordor, Lord of the Rings game, a couple others. But
If you're looking to build a budget gaming PC, Linus Tech Tips usually every now and again goes through and shows you how or what the lowest specs are that are good. And I know Hack 5, I don't think they do it anymore, but they used to do their $300 builds and $500 builds. That know-how.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned Linus Tech Tips because you've mentioned them before. And I have been watching a number of those videos. I have a TV in my kitchen with a Chromecast on it. And so if I'm doing stuff in the kitchen, I like to just kind of throw something on the tube and play it while I'm working in the kitchen. So Linus Tech Tips was this week's pick. I watched a handful of those videos. Pretty good.
Yeah, I think they're on Scrapyard Wars 8, which is always fun.
Yeah, I watched part of that. It was really good. But I guess a lot of that would have been good for one of our gaming episodes, but I didn't have a whole lot of time to put into gaming about at the time we were doing it. So once I did have some spare time to just goof off, that's what I did, and it was fun. So none of that is exactly breaking news, but perhaps we should move into some news.
All right, so this Fortnite, we've got a lot of news. That was way more news than I was expecting. I think we even knocked off a couple of news articles so we could shorten this up a little bit. But with the turn of the month, that means we get a Linux Mint monthly news. This is probably the shortest one I've ever seen Clem put out. But yeah, we've got a cool few points, and the first one is all three editions of Linux Mint 19.3 passed QA, and they'll be announcing the beta release on Tuesday. That'll be December 3rd, or the day that you're listening to, the day after you're listening to this. Yeah, very cool. Then they also have, so they put this in the blog post, and I don't know what this means, but they're being secretive about it. They have an unannounced change to the software section of the software manager, and there are three new apps that are going to be making their arrival. So, unannounced. Surprise! Ooh. They're going to be Christmas presents, I think.
Sounds more like Halloween presents. They're being spooky on us.
See, I like Halloween. It's my favorite holiday. That's not a holiday, actually, yeah. And then the last thing they bring up is system reports will now give messages from the tray. So this is going to give users access to if there are workarounds to specific issues that affect all Mint users, the solutions to them, any kind of information that they need to give you. And it's really going to be used for big announcements, right? So if you install the 19.3 beta, or you're on 19.2 and fully updated, you're going to get the announcement for 19.3 in this tray option. So they're backporting it to older versions of Linux Mint so that everybody gets access to this. So long as I read that right, that means everybody, if you're updated, is going to get this announcement directly from the desktop. So you don't have to, you know, be reading the internet and stumble upon an article that says 19.3 is out. It is going to tell you straight from the OS. So that's going to be quite nice. Then next up, Moss is going to tell us a little bit about System 76 and their designs. So what's up with this?
Yeah, apparently they're going to start designing and building their computers from the ground up in Denver. Probably not all at once, but instead of just buying a Clevo or Sager machine and doing tweaks to the hardware and then putting Pop OS on it, they're actually going to be designing some of the hardware and eventually designing all of the hardware and not just assembling it in Denver. That's one of my all-time favorite jobs if I could get it. If I could breathe in Denver and if I could afford the rent in Denver. I spent a good part of my younger life there. But that's really about it. They're getting a lot of really good comments on the designs that they've done on the cases and whatnot. The article linked in the show notes is from Jason Evangelo at Forbes, and enjoy.
Yeah, I gotta say, the designs are not for me, but they are nice designs. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm a glass side panel kind of guy with way too many RGB lights, so, yeah.
What, you don't like wood sides?
Well, I was going to say, right, their muted woodness is, it's not for me, but it is pretty nice, man. And I could see how that could fit into an office setting or, you know, someone that likes plants. It fits really well with, like, big leafy plants, I think. Next up, Kali Linux 2019.4. is released. So this is a pretty big change for them. I use Kali a lot because, I keep it on a flash drive, and just in case I ever need to recover something from a machine or do any kind of anything Linux, it's one of two Linux flash drives I have just around with me in my backpack with me all the time. And Linux Mint being the other. I try to keep that as current as I can. But Kali for all the other tools. So they're making some pretty big changes that I agree with. So I don't use XFCE as my main driver, but for in a VM or on a laptop that I'm unfamiliar with the hardware of, XFCE is pretty much always the right choice for me. It's super lightweight. And where I'm going with this is Kali 2019.4, that XFCE is now the new default desktop. So I feel like that's going to change, or that's going to shorten up the boot time a lot. And this is the feature that's kind of been making the rounds on the internet, Kali-Undercover. So if you open up a terminal and type Kali-Undercover, it will change the stock XFCE look to Windows. Just in case you needed something to look like Windows, you can run Kali-Undercover, and it will. The theme is actually pretty good. It really
no,
does.
No, boss, I ain't doing nothing really. See, I'm running Windows.
I'm just wondering if I could use that to trick the kids and the wife to make them think that they're using Windows.
It's possible. What I would do is I would put XFCE, some distro with XFCE on it, and then steal the theme. Kali running it as your daily driver is probably not the best thing to do.
Yeah, that's a bad idea. Yeah,
or you could just use Xorin OS Lite with XFCE and it still looks like Windows.
Now Kali Undercover goes like all in. They have the icons, they have the color theme, they have the Windows menu, like everything. And I'm telling you, unless you are really familiar with what Windows looks like and how it behaves, I really think it can fool some people. So if Xorin's like that, then go with Xorin. But otherwise, yeah, steal this theme. This theme is fantastic.
Man, I haven't loaded Kali in forever. I'm going to have to set some up.
Yeah, it's just for, I don't know. I'm kind of outing myself here. But, you know, it's when I need to run the John the Ripper or Hydra, and I don't want to install
right,
that on
built
my
in.
Main machine.
Metasploit.
You know, yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, see, if you want to take advantage of Eternal Blue, and you would be way, I don't know.
How are you going to test your own network without Kali?
Exactly. The OpenFaz install is quite easy to do. Yeah. So anyway, just in case you needed some ideas, Kali will do it for you. So the Markdown Overlords, they are winning. Kali's documentation is now in Markdown. And ButterFS is, I didn't flesh out the notes, but ButterFS is finally supported in Kali as well, but not by default. So you have to do a little trickery during the install to make it ButterFS. But looks like Kali is hopping on that train as well. They bring up the fact that most of the time you're going to be using Kali in a VM, but on the off chance that you're using Kali on bare metal, you need a way to roll back. You know, most VM hosts have like a snapshot utility of some kind to help you do that, but bare metal doesn't, and they're trying to create that feature by using ButterFS. So some really cool stuff out of the Kali shop. This is going to be the last update for 2019. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I'm really happy to be sticking this on my flash drive from now on. It's going to be good. It's going to be really good. Now, Moss has got another one with Cape Technologies, and I know we were kind of waffling about what's actually what on this one. Did you get to the bottom of this?
I got it. Basically, Cape Technologies has acquired London Trust Media Holdings, which is the owner and creator of Privacy Internet Access, PIA. The deal came up to $127.6 million of cash, new stock, and debt to pick up the largest of the VPN companies. It gives them a, between their other holdings, which included CyberGhost and Zen, was it? Where's my notes?
ZenMate.
ZenMate, yeah. They now have like 2.1 million users between the three. They're going to be changing their name to PIA and changing the other two VPNs to PIA. Hopefully, they are going to be keeping PIA's policies and not be logging anything.
Hopefully.
Yeah, this is my VPN of choice. So if any of that policy changes, I'll be looking for somebody else. But if they keep it the same,
if they don't, they will have shot themselves in the foot clear up to the hip, because that's why people use PIA.
Yeah, exactly. I know that was the big thing back in the day when PIA first started up. That was, you know, there were like lists every month of like VPNs that don't log you, and PIA was always on top of that list.
That and PIA's support for anything open source, really.
Oh, yeah, but they stopped. Who was it, Linux Journal?
They started dialing back, but this is probably the reason. They wanted to stop that outgoing so that they could then sell the company.
As I see it, the reason for pulling out on Linux Journal was A, they were losing money, B, they were losing money, and C, they were losing money, and D, they wanted to sell the company.
Exactly.
Hopefully.
They gave those guys time to get the, you know, all of their money matters in order, and it didn't really work out, so then, you know, they stopped paying money towards them.
I mean, the article did say they were, what, $32.1 million in debt that Cape Technologies assumed?
Whew, a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
My hope is they'll still continue to be in the open source community and back projects and maintain that part of the culture, provided they're financially able to do so.
It'll probably be a little while before you hear that. Let them get everything settled first.
Yep.
All right. And Tony Watts has a little bit for us on Kernel 5.4. I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, you know, it seems like we were just talking about 5.3, and 5.4 is now released. The primary feature of Kernel 5.4 is a new kernel lockdown mode, and that should improve security a bit by way of separation of UID 0, also known as root, and the kernel. So we'll see what benefits we gain from that, but that should make things more secure. Other features, loads of AMD support added, including, Leo, listen to this, Navi 12 and Navi 14 GPUs.
Yes!
Along with additional graphics cards and a whole host of other AMD support. Lots of ARM support added, Snapdragon 855 in particular, and a whole bunch of ARM-based laptops, which I was glad to see. A couple of the all-in-one foldable, you know, touchscreen laptop things that are powered with ARM processors, the HP Envy X2 and Lenovo Mix 630 were a couple that caught my eye that are in that lineup of those kind of devices. So that's good to see. Hopefully we'll continue to see more support for Linux on ARM laptops going forward with this kernel. I think it may be about all I'm going to highlight on that one, but we'll have a link in the show notes to the article that has a whole lot more detail.
Yeah, I know Moss really keeps an eye on the LTS kernel. So Moss, hopefully this piqued your interest as well. And I don't know what I'm curious to see what Ubuntu is going to come out with for the long term support release. If they're going to go with 5.4 or if they'll go a little higher than that. I guess time will tell. We'll see how that goes. All right, and Joe's going to tell us a little bit about the kernel support on Android. So what's happening there?
Yeah, I was looking at this article, and it's really long and in depth, and so I'm going to break it down pretty simple for you. And the answer is maybe. And they already have one device, which I can't find that part of the article again. Oh, here it is: the Xiaomi Poco F1 actually running the mainline Linux kernel under the usual Android OS. But like the title of the article says, this is about getting the mainline kernel working for Android. It'll really help make it so that you get longer term support and it's not completely forking for each different device that is out there. getting the mainline Linux kernel working on all devices would provide a much longer time for things like updates. But at the end of the article, after all this talking they do about Google trying to make it happen, they said that it might eventually.
Yeah, and so this is one thing that scared me away, because you were talking about security updates and how long a device gets it. That's what scared me away from Android in the first place. I'm not trying to throw my phone away every 2 years, because I do not. I can't afford it. I can't afford to go buy the newest flagship or whatever, but I need those specs. So I usually wait for a year or two, and then by the time I get my hands on one, there's only like a year or two of support left. And so swapping phones every 2 years is just not really an option for me. But if this happens, if they go forward with this, that would be fantastic. It would entice me to come back over to Android again. But the security stuff still kind of keeps me at arm's length, I think. But, you know, overall, I think it's going to be a good change if it goes forward.
Right. And running the mainline kernel would be nice, because then you would see a lot more phone development from developers. You know, you'd see more versions of Ubuntu that end up working on a phone.
So yeah, so
eventually one day.
Does that mean that I don't think that's what that means, that you, because it has a Linux kernel, you wouldn't necessarily be able to run Linux software. You would just have better hardware support and longer term support, right?
I think you are right, but I still think you'd get more developers that would look at it more closely.
Yeah, you're definitely right about that. That would entice me to at least buy one. So I imagine it might entice someone to code for one too.
If you're not opposed to flashing things like Linux Linux Lineage and custom ROMs, you know, you can get long support now. And I'm trying to think of the Project Treble was the name of the Google project that went in, that basically allowed the same base to be used so that custom ROM developers can continue, you know, putting out support for a phone and more easily write a ROM to it. That's just a side effect.
Right.
You know, obviously, the manufacturers can do that more easily too, and that's the bigger, you know, more commercial benefit, but makes things real easy for the custom ROM community to keep a device alive for a very long time.
Right. But then again, you only see that with more mainstream devices. For your more obscure devices, you're not going to see a whole lot of people developing specifically for that to keep it alive, to keep the security updates out there.
Yeah, true. I think you would, if you're going to continue to get updates on a device for a long period of time, you're going to need it to be a fairly popular device just kind of anyway, in order for anybody to, whether it be the manufacturer or the community or whatever, to have enough interest to spend the time.
Right. And rooting and ROMing is not as popular as it used to be. I you know, kind of wish that it was, but it's just not anymore for some reason.
Yeah. I can't even say that I recommend it. I'm hard-pressed to explain why I still do it, but I do.
There used to be really big reasons for it, like around the Note 3 era and the S3 era, when when Google, you know, Android was cutting out support for direct access to your micro SD card and things like that. There were good reasons to root it.
Yep. You would actually get performance gains, too.
Uh-huh. Because I remember running Paranoid Android for a while on, it was a Nexus something or another. And then I moved to Cyanogen Mod after that. And then it turned out, I remember one of the things that, and I think this is probably why rooting and ROMing is less popular, but Android got good. They stole ideas from like Paranoid Android. They took a lot of the ideas of the modding community and just added them directly to Android. So less people needed to move altogether.
Yep. And I guess the reason I'm running Lineage now is because I expect the Lineage folks to keep putting out updates for this OnePlus 3T that's approaching, I don't know, I guess it's 3 years old. Yeah. You know, OnePlus is going to stop putting out updates for it anytime. I have to tip my hat to them for updating it as long as they have, but there's no way they're going to continue very long, whereas I imagine Lineage updates will continue.
Right. That's a good reason to do it.
Yep.
Well, speaking of phones, the Librem 5 is shipping. So, Tony Watts, tell us a little bit about this first impressions article.
Yeah, so people actually have this in their hands now, so that's exciting news. It's very much early adopter developer stage right now, so there are some flaws to be expected. But they're pretty big ones, to be honest. And so, of course, the internet's going nuts with this, and Reddit is blowing up with people, you know, making a big deal out of the issues. But I think, you know, Purism was very clear that the first lot of these to ship were going to have issues. These were going to be models primarily for developers, although some early adopter backers have them too. But some of the issues, the big one is even though it can make calls, it can't play audio for those calls, I believe was the issue there. And that's one people have been making a pretty big deal about. Some camera issues. The battery life is generally kind of meh. I guess it gets pretty warm after prolonged use as well. But just generally speaking, this is very alpha status. And I don't find any of this to be discouraging myself. I am encouraged that units are going out the door, that this is continuing, and we're seeing progress. A couple other things that have caused some buzz. Some former employees have expressed that the company has released disingenuous updates, and by that meaning they have tried to kind of cover up lack of progress by putting out updates that sound more promising than what things might really be. Again, I don't find that particularly odd or discouraging either, as long as it's not blatant dishonesty. That's kind of the nature of what a company does, right? They're going to make things sound as promising as they can and work through issues. So that's all kind of to be expected. I guess where I land on this and where a lot of people would land on this, kind of twofold. One, I'm glad to see the progress continuing. I think this is an important project. But two, I think you really have to believe in the Librem 5 in particular to justify backing it at $699, especially now the PinePhone is coming and is $149. I fully realize this is almost an experiment, I guess we would say, but yeah, it's just, you know, kind of mediocre hardware for $700, really.
Yeah, with the Librem phones, I know that they've tried this several times in the past, or at least a couple times in the past, and it always comes out to the same thing. You're paying premium price for a 3 to 5 year old hardware.
Yeah. And I think the people that can afford to do it are probably looking at it as a donation, which is great. And you know, I'm glad the project is there. But I am a little more excited about the PinePhone and what they're doing with these really affordable Linux devices. And the PinePhone is slightly under spec'd compared to the Librem 5, but not a lot. And at $149, wow. I mean, you know, that's exciting to see that's coming. So we'll follow that closely.
All right. And next up, we finally get a release from the Glimpse guys. So for those of you that may not remember or don't know, Glimpse is a fork of GIMP, and it was about quibbles over the name. So however, the Glimpse guys do plan on adding their own feature set, but they do remind us on the release statement that it really is just upstream GIMP, at least right now. So the 0.1.0 release is based on GIMP 2.10.12, and GIMP is currently on 2.10.14, so they're slightly behind. And it looks like the Glimpse guys prefer Flatpak to install. So just in case you want to install it, Flatpak install Flathub. Oh, shoot. I always forget how to do the Flatpak thing. It's like org dot something, something, something. So just do a Flatpak search Glimpse first and then do that.
I'm a rebel, Leo. I've just installed the snap.
Oh, so the reason that I say is the Glimpse guys put front and center Flatpak. I do know that there is a snap install and an AUR install, but they make a point to put that under the community section instead of the straight up how to install whatever. So seems to me their preferred way to install is Flatpak, but snap and the AUR do have Glimpse as well. I did install Glimpse like right before the show. So I didn't do anything in it, but it starts up. So, you know, that's a plus for a not full release, I guess. So, really cool. Windows and Mac are also supported just as they are for GIMP as well. And yeah, so in the IRC, Poppy drops a link to the Glimpse Editor just in case you need that. Some easy clicky-clicky instead of having to type something out. Ooh, and a Canonical engineer made the snap. Very cool. So I add a little bit of trust into that as well. And the last thing we have is, speaking of Gentoo from earlier, a U.S. student was building a Gentoo-based distro for what, Moss?
I do not want to come off as the team's Gentoo expert here because I am not. But a U.S. student is in court. If he is found guilty, he could serve up to 20 years in prison for building a Gentoo-based distro for ISIS. Apparently, he was also allegedly created a Python script to automate saving ISIS multimedia from official social media channels so other members could repost it on their own accounts and help spread the terrorist group's propaganda. So, we do have a link to the article on ZDNet, and oh boy. The OS was designed to, quote, prevent exploitation by intelligence agencies, end quote.
Ooh, boy. All right. Well, it's Linux's time to shine. What were they saying? In the Microsoft EULA, they do have a little subsection in there where it says, you will not use Microsoft to build nuclear anything, right? Huh. Does Linux need that now, too? We don't do terrorists, I guess, maybe.
Is it Linux for everyone? Yeah, I guess it is.
Talk to Jason Evangelo about that.
That's it. Well, a last little blurb on the Glimpse thing. So we know that there's a snap that's available in snapcraft.io, and it looked like Heather Ellsworth is the one that she worked with the Glimpse team to package that up over on the Snap side. So I don't want to make it sound like Flatpak is the only way to do it. Go get it on a Snap as well. Heather worked hard on it. All right. Well, that'll be it for our news, and we get to talk about the... I guess it's news too, but the somber side of the news. Our security update. Let's head on that way. So in our security update, we have three links here. I'm going to go through them pretty quickly because it's more of an update, less of news. But if you're running on a D-Link router, you're going to want to check this out. So D-Link is planning on not fixing these routers. I have a list in the show notes, but it's basically a flaw, CVE-2019-16920, that D-Link will not fix an attack or a flaw that allows an attacker to bypass authentication entirely to get admin access to your router. Not good at all. So you can mitigate the issue on the outside, so from the internet side, by turning off remote management overall, but that does not stop the attack if they are already on your network. So I get it. I don't let untrusted people on my network, so they wouldn't have any but it doesn't matter. These routers are already on the do not fix list, and there's no telling how many other flaws these devices have that D-Link doesn't know about, that security researchers don't know about, but they're on a list, and whatever comes out later is not going to get fixed. So do yourself a favor and upgrade to something else.
Current list is 13 models. There's a good number for you.
I made a quick attempt to see if OpenWRT was available for these particular models, and I hit on some D-Link models that definitely is an option for, but I was just kind of curious if that's maybe a good escape hatch for folks that already have this equipment, if they may be able to just flash it with different firmware.
You know, I forgot about OpenWRT and DDWRT, though that would be an escape hatch because it's a totally different firmware. I know I was running on the DIR 615 for the longest time, and I'm glad I got away from it. But I think that one was supported by DDWRT, so maybe something to look into for sure.
This has also kind of been a common theme, at least for like the last 20 years or so, where routers simply won't get updates once a security flaw is found. I think most of the router companies, most of the companies that make routers, have had some kind of problem like this that they didn't go back and fix.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's just like the phone manufacturers. It's the same reason that I don't like Android, because you get updates for 3 years, and after that, it's just like, hope your phone doesn't get hacked. See you later. Never going to update you again. Bye. And that just bugs the crap out of me. If you're going to put something out, and you're going to put people in danger from things they don't even know about, then you should probably take care of these people. Now, I mean, you can't support everything forever, but man, I don't know. A couple of years just doesn't seem like it's enough. Anyway, Mozilla is increasing their bug bounty payout, so if you are a coder or a security researcher in any way, you might want to take a look at this. So they're doubling their bug bounty payouts for critical core and other Mozilla sites, and tripling for remote code execution on the critical sites. So Firefox Monitor and Firefox Private Network are part of the core site. So if you can find yourself some vulnerabilities in these things, there's some money in it for you. And lastly, a Webmin attack. So we talked about Webmin, and I think Josh and I kind of bantered back and forth about it because he runs it on a couple of different machines. He wasn't affected by it at the time, but it looks like in episode 316, we covered this the first time, and now it's reared its ugly head, and Webmin is getting attacked by Mr. Roboto the botnet. So the vulnerability we're talking about was from 316, finally got weaponized. Roboto the botnet is utilizing the flaw to be able to create a reverse shell, run commands, and run files from within URLs, and do DDoS, as well as self-uninstall. So, this means that unless you've got some really good auditing, Roboto might be able to do what it needs to do and get out before you ever know anything happened. And unless you're going back and checking, you may never know. So, episode 316, go check that one out. We also have a link in the show notes for some recommendations on what to do. But short and sweet, update Webmin. All right, well, that's it for our security update. So on our way out, Joe, tell me a little about where we can find you outside of the show.
Well, I'm on a couple other podcasts. I'm on Tilts, and that's at www.tllts.org. I'm on the Linux Lugcast, which is at linuxlugcast.com. We need to adjust that in the show notes. There's no longer www in front of it. You can find me on MeWe, and you can hit me up at jb@mintcast.org.
Nice. And Bo's not with us today, but you can find him at theundercastnetwork.com. What about you, Moss?
What about me? Oh, you can find me at Triad Bardic College, Peaceful Hippo, on MeWe. My music's on Bandcamp and on my YouTube channel, or Robert Warren's channel. I should have my Reverb Nation site back soon, as discussed earlier. You can reach me at moss@mintcast.org, distrohoppersdigest@gmail.com, at my sponsors, now with tears and a donate button. That's not tears as in crying about it, but unless I get some sponsors, I might be crying about it.
You can add some
it.
Of those, too.
Yeah, okay. How about you, Tony?
Okay. Well, you can find me on HPR, I'm host ID 338. I do an occasional blog at tony-hughes.blogspot.com. I'm on Twitter, tonyh1212. And you can also get me at distrohoppersdigest@gmail.com and th@mintcast.org.
And Tony Watts, more of you.
You can find some of my musical pursuits at Echoes of Savages on anything, really. Been quiet a bit on that front while we're recording, but hopefully we'll have some good stuff coming out of that soon that you can check out. Hang out in the MeWe Mintcast group, and you can email me at tw@mintcast.org.
Awesome, and I'm looking forward to that. And Josh isn't with us today as well. He's revising, I think is what he says. So at school, lots and lots of school. You can get him at josh@mintcast.org, josh@edublocks.org, edublocks.org, and @all_about_code on Twitter. And for me, leochavez.org and @leochavez on Twitter. And you can get your 5-minute news digest at Full Circle Weekly News. I promise I'll be caught up one of these days. But before we leave, we want to make sure to acknowledge some of the people who make Mintcast possible. Josh for all his work on the website and the live stream, except for today. ByteMark Hosting for hosting Mintcast.org and our Mumble server. Archive.org for hosting all of our audio files. And the Linux Mint development team for the fine distro we love to talk about every fortnight. Thanks, Clem.
Thanks, Clem.
Thanks, Clem.
Thanks, Clem.
This has been another episode of the Mintcast podcast. The show notes for this episode are at mintcast.org. You can send us email at mintcast@mintcast.org. You can find more information about Linux Mint at www.linuxmint.com. You can follow both Mintcast and Linux Mint on Twitter, @Mintcast and @Linux_Mint. Thanks to Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com for our theme music, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Mint.